During all of Isabella's childhood, Michael had been her protector and adviser and confidant. And after Nana, her favourite storyteller. She trusted Michael more than anybody else in her life. And if Sean hadn't been so wonderful and Garrick so lovable and cuddly, then Michael would definitely have been her favourite brother. It was a dead heat between the three of them for her affections. But she loved Michael as much as any of them, and now his handwriting on the envelope gave her a warm glow of pleasure and a prickle of guilt. She hadn't written to him since she had met Ramon, almost 6 months ago. The second paragraph of the first page caught her eye the instant she unfolded it, and she skipped the salutation and went straight to it. Pater tells me that you were cosily ensconced in Cadogan Square and labouring mightily on your thesis. Good for you, Bella. However, I am sure that you are not presently occupying all five of the bedrooms, and I was hoping that you could fit me in somehow. I plan to be in London for 3 weeks from the 15th of the month. I'll be out all day, every day. I have a full schedule of interviews and meetings, so I promise not to be a nuisance and interfere with your studies. It was a complication in that she would be forced to take up physical residence at Cadogan Square for the period of Michael's visit. However, most fortunately, it coincided with one of Ramon's periodic travels abroad. She would have been alone anyway. Now, at least, she would have Michael's company. She sent him a cable addressed to the Mail's offices in Johannesburg and set about making Cadogan Square look as though it was being permanently lived in. She had a week to prepare for Michael's arrival. "There'll have to be some explanations," she told Ramon, and clasped the neat little bulge of her tummy. "Luckily, Michael is so understanding. I'm sure that the two of you would get on well together. I wish you could meet him." "I will try to complete my business ahead of time and get back to London while your brother is still here."
"Oh, Ramon, darling, I would love that. Please do try."
She was waiting for Michael as he pushed his luggage trolley through the international arrivals barrier at Heathrow, and she let out a squeal of glee as she recognised him. He swung her off her feet, and then his expression changed as he felt her stomach against him, and he set her down again with exaggerated gentleness. As she drove him into town in the Mini, she kept darting glances at him. He was tanned. When you lived in London, you noticed that immediately. And he had grown his hair fashionably long. It curled over the collar of his bottle-green corduroy hacking jacket. However, his smile was still boyish and frank, and the blue Courtney eyes lacked the hard, acquisitive sparkle of all the other Courtneys, and were instead mild and thoughtful. She pumped him for news at home, partly to satisfy her curiosity, but mostly to keep the conversation away from her fecund belly. According to Michael, Pater had engrossed himself in his new duties as chairman of Arms Corps. Nana was growing more vigorous and more imperious every day, ruling Feltefrieden with an iron fist. She'd even taken up breeding retrievers and training them for gundog trials. Sean was still killing platoons of gorillas and droves of buffalo. He had recently been promoted to a reserve captain in the Ballantine Scouts, one of the crack Rhodesian regiments. Gary had just presented his shareholders with record company profits for the sixth year in succession. His wife Holly was about to produce another infant. Everybody was holding thumbs for a girl this time. As he said this, Michael glanced at her midriff significantly. But Isabella concentrated all her attention on the traffic to avoid an explanation, and at last parked the Mini in the Mews garage at the back of the square. Michael was suffering from jet lag, so she ran him a foam bath and brought him a whiskey and soda. While he was soaking, she sat on the closed lid of the toilet seat and chatted. She would never have contemplated sharing a bathroom with either Sean or Gary. But between Michael and herself, nudity was natural and unremarked. "Do you remember that silly little nonsense rhyme?" Michael asked at last. "How did it go again?"
"Dum-da-dum-da-dum. And her father said, 'Nelly, there is more in your belly than ever went in through your mouth.'"
Isabella chuckled unashamedly.
"Is that what they called the trained journalistic eye? You don't miss anything, do you, Mickey?"
"Miss it?" he laughed with her. "Your tummy damn near knocked out my trained journalistic eye."
"Pretty, isn't it?"
Isabella pushed it out as far as it could go, and patted it proudly. "Stunning," Michael agreed. "And I am sure that Pater and Nana would agree if they could see it."
"You won't tell, will you, Mickey?"
We don't tell each other's secrets, you and me. Never have, never will. But what are you going to do with the eventual result? My son. Your nephew. You call that a result? Shame on you, Mickey. Ramon calls it the greatest miracle and mystery of the universe. Ramon. So that's the culprit's name. I hope he's wearing bulletproof knickers when Nana catches up with him, toting her trusty old shotgun loaded with buckshot. He's a Marquez, Mickey. The Marquez de Santiago y Machado. Well, that might make a difference. Nana's enough of a snob to be impressed. She'd probably reduce the charge from buckshot to birdshot. By the time Nana finds out about it, I'll be a Marquesa. So the nefarious Ramon intends making an honest woman out of you, does he? When? Well, there is a little bit of a hitch, she admitted. You mean he's married already? How did you know that, Mickey? She gaped at him. And his wife won't give him a divorce. Mickey, my love, that's the hoariest old chestnut in the pack. Michael stood up, cascading soapy bathwater, and reached for the towel. You don't know him, Mickey. He's not like that. May I take that as an impartial and totally unbiased opinion? Michael stepped out of the bath and began to towel himself down. He loves me. So I see. Don't be flippant. Make me a promise, Bella. If anything goes wrong, come to me first. Will you promise me that? She nodded. Yes, I promise. You're still my best friend, I promise. But nothing's going to go wrong. You just wait and see. She took him to dinner at Ma Cuisine in Walton Street. The restaurant was so popular that they would never have got a table had not Isabella made the reservation the very day that she heard Michael was coming to London. I like escorting a pregger, Michael remarked as they settled in the table. Everybody smiles at me as though I'm responsible. Nonsense. It's simply because you're so handsome. They talked about their work. Isabella made him promise to read her thesis and make suggestions. Then Michael explained that the main reason he was in London was to write a series of articles on the anti-apartheid movement and the South African political exiles living in Britain. I've arranged interviews with some of the leading lights, Oliver Tambo, Dennis Brutus. Do you think our censors will let you publish the article? Isabella asked. They'll probably ban the entire edition again, and Gary will be furious. Anything that affects the profits makes Gary furious. Michael chuckled. Poor old Gary. That title was habitual, but no longer appropriate. Life is so simple for him. Not the black and white of morality, but the black and red of the bank statement. With the dessert, Michael asked suddenly, How's Meta? Have you seen her lately? Not Meta, nor Mother. Nor even Mummy, Isabella corrected him tartly. You know that she thinks those terms terribly bourgeois. But to answer your question, no, I haven't seen Tara for some time. She is our mother, Bella. She might have thought of that when she deserted Pater and the rest of us and ran off with a black revolutionary and bore him a little brown bastard. And you might be a shade more charitable when it comes to bearing bastards, Michael said mildly, and then saw the hurt in her eyes. I'm sorry, Bella, but as in your case, there are reasons for all things. We shouldn't judge her too harshly. Pater can't be the easiest man in the world to be married to, and not everybody can play the game to the rules that Nana lays down. Some of us don't have the killer instincts finely enough developed. I don't think Tara fitted into the family at all. Not from the very beginning. She never was an elitist. Her sympathies were always with the underdog. And then Moses Gama came into her life.
Mickey, darling, Isabella leant across the table and took his hand. You are the most compassionate, understanding person in the world. You spend your life making excuses for us, protecting us from the fates. I do love you so much. I don't even want to fight or argue with you.
Good, he squeezed her hand. Then you'll come along and see Tara with me. She writes to me regularly. She adores you, Isabella, and she misses you terribly. It hurts her when you avoid her. Oh, Mickey, you set a trap for me, you devil. She thought furiously for a second. But what about my condition? I was hoping to be a little bit more discreet. Tara is your mother, she loves you, and they don't come any more broad-minded than our Tara. She's not going to do anything to hurt you, you know that.
Ah, well, to please you, she sighed and capitulated.
Only to please you, Mickey. So, on the following Saturday morning, they walked down Brompton Road, and Michael had to stretch his long legs to match her flowing athletic stride. "Are you training to have a sprog bod, or for the next Olympics?" he asked with a grin. "You smoke too much," Isabella scoffed at him. "It's my only vice." Tara Courtney, or Tara Garmer, as she now called herself, was the manageress of a small residential hotel off Cromwell Road, and her clientele was composed almost exclusively of expatriates and new immigrants from Africa and India and the Caribbean. It always amazed Isabella that an area like this existed only 20 minutes' walk from the grandeur of Cadogan Square. The Lord Kitchener Hotel was as shabby and run down as its manageress. Again, it amazed Isabella that her mother was the same person who had once presided over the great chateau of Veltefrieden. Isabella's earliest memories were of her mother in a full-length ball gown with yellow diamonds from the Courtney mine at Hani, glittering at her smooth white throat and on her earlobes, her dark auburn hair piled high on her lovely head as she came down the sweep of the marble staircase. Isabella had never suspected the terrible dissatisfaction and misery that must have festered beneath that regal façade. Now Tara's magnificent head of hair had greyed, and she had touched it up with a cheap home dye job that came up in variegated tones of ginger and brazen plum. Her skin that Isabella had inherited in all its silken perfection had withered and bagged and wrinkled with neglect. There were little blackheads lodged in the enlarged pores around the creases between her nose and cheeks, and her false teeth were too large for her mouth, distorting the sweet line of her lips. She rushed down the front steps of the hotel to embrace Isabella in a cloud of pungent cologne. Isabella returned her hug with the strength of a guilty conscience. "Let me look at my darling daughter." She held Isabella at arm's length, and her eyes dropped immediately. "You have grown more beautiful, Bella, if that were possible. But the reason is pretty obvious. I see you are carrying a little bundle of fun and joy." Isabella's smile crooked with annoyance, but she ignored the reference. "You look well, Mummy. Tara, I mean." Tara wore the self-conscious uniform of the militant left-winger, a shapeless grey cardigan over a full-length granny print shift and men's open brown sandals. "It's been months," Tara complained, "almost a year, and you live just down the road. How can you neglect your old mum so?" Michael intervened smoothly, deflecting Tara's self-pity, embracing her with unfeigned warmth and enthusiasm. She turned to him with theatrical mother love. "Mickey, you were always the sweetest and most loving of all my children." And Isabella's smile began to hurt her lips. She wondered just how long she had to stay, and when she could escape. She knew it wasn't going to be easy, and that for once she could expect little support from Michael. Tara linked her arms through theirs, Michael on one side of her and Isabella on the other, and she led them into the hotel. "I've got tea and biscuits ready for you. I've been in an absolute tiz ever since Michael called to say you were coming." On a Saturday morning, the Lord Kitchener's public lounge was filled with Tara's guests. The air was thick with tobacco smoke and the cadences of Swahili and Gujarati and Khoza. Tara introduced them to everyone in the room, even though Isabella had met many of them on her previous visits. "My son and daughter from Cape Town in South Africa." And she saw how some of the eyes flicked at the name of her country. To hell with them too, Isabella decided defiantly. Funny how at home she thought of herself as a liberal, but when she was abroad and encountered that reaction, she thought of herself as a patriot. At last Tara seated them in a corner of the lounge, and while she poured tea she asked in a bright and cheery tone that carried clearly to everybody in the large room, "So now, Bella, tell me about the baby. When are you expecting it, and who is the father?" "This is hardly the time or the place, Tara." Isabella paled with irritation. But Tara laughed. "We're all just one big family here at the Lordy. You can talk freely." This time Michael murmured gently, "Bella really doesn't want all the world to know her private business. We'll talk about it later, Tara."